And now time for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Before nerds became billionaires and geeks ruled the world, I'm talking about way back in the 1980s, if you were a slightly brainy, disaffected teenager, okay, like me, there was one route to unlimited power. It involved pencils, paper, and a 20-sided die. Dungeons and Dragons, or D&D, as it was affectionately called, was a game, a culture, and in some cases an epithet hurled across the lunchroom. Dungeons & Dragons is most certainly alive and kicking, but its creator, Gary Gygax, passed away last week. Adam Rogers, a senior editor at Wired magazine, mourned his loss, and so are we. We're talking Dungeons & Dragons. If you were a cleric, a druid, a paladin, or a monk, let us know how D&D influenced your life. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation, where you can also find a link to Adam Rogers' article, Geek Love. Adam Rogers joins us today from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks. I got to roll a D10 here just to see if I have enough dexterity to keep talking about this. So can you just stand by for just one second? Okay, we're good. Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm sure you do. Right, so this is Gary Gygax's world, and we're just living in it. Is that what you're saying?
That's the notion. Yeah, poor Gary. Rest in peace. I mean, here's the idea in a nutshell, basically, is that us disaffected kids, disaffected youth of America Unite, who were kind of playing D&D in the basement instead of going outside, are the ones who were so profoundly affected by the structure of this game and by what it stood for that we went on out into the world, grew up, got jobs, and the jobs that we got are the ones that are the linchpin jobs of American popular culture and technological culture today. They're the people who built the Gmails and the Facebooks and the iPhones and the big flat screen well, probably not the big flat screen TVs because those all come from Japan, but you get what I'm saying.
So tell me about Adam Rogers in junior high.
I mean, what was it like? Dude, really?
Yeah. This is what you were afraid of, but you have the strength.
Sandbagged.
Believe me, yeah.
Right. Well, let's see. So I had a Buckaroo Banzai t-shirt that I wore a lot.
Oh.
I tended to speak in lines from Ghostbusters. The haircut was unfortunate. I don't really know how much more I'm comfortable going into this, actually. I thought I'd blocked a lot of this out. It's all coming back. I mean, you know, the thing was that it's a popular notion to say that the kids who were like me were kind of asocial and outcast. But of course we weren't. We were outcast from the popular kids, right? We were outcast from the kids who knew how to play basketball and the ones who knew how to talk to girls. But there were a lot of us who were huddled together over in one corner of the yard playing Dungeons and Dragons, among other things. I mean, I'm happy to say that not only was I not friendless, but I'm still friends with most of those guys.
Do you think if we had had the technology we have now, the internet and online social networks and games, do you think you still would have been playing something like Dungeons and Dragons?
I think that even at the time, I was spending a little bit of time on online and on bulletin board services and stuff like that. You know, the technology obviously wasn't advanced, but the beginnings of digital connectivity were there for at least part of that. I guess I may be conflating some of the timing on this, trying to remember when I got that Apple IIe and started playing around with BASIC. But I do think that one of the reasons that Dungeons & Dragons no longer has the scale of popularity that it used to, it's still popular and people play it, but that it doesn't anymore because things have risen up to replace it, like, let's say, EverQuest or World of Warcraft, you know, the kind of online, massive multiplayer versions of D&D. And I don't mean to belittle those games by saying that they're versions of something that came before. They owe a lot to the gaming structures and the ideas and the narrative style that Dungeons & Dragons brought to things. Only now you can do it with millions of people and you can do it for 60 hours a week. It's why they call EverQuest EverCrack.
Absolutely. And even in social networking sites, there is something about having friends you've never met, having your identity be captured in a list of statistics and likes and dislikes and favorite music. There's something very Dungeons and Dragons about that. The cool kids are going to hate me saying that, but
it's very compelling to be able to reduce compelling, especially for a geek like me, to be able to reduce a personality or define a personality quantitatively. Right. What interests me and what interests a lot of very smart researchers, Sherry Turkle and Mitch Resnick at MIT, for example, both write about this, is what that identity is that you present online and how different it is from your actual self and where you can experiment with identity. And I do think that geeks kind of discovered this in the 70s and in the 80s playing Dungeons and Dragons and were able to rethink their place in the world, rethink our place in the world, based on where you could, how you presented, and when you could present, without any intuitive grasp of interpersonal relationships, right? Without any sort of immediate empathy for other human beings, you can start to do the numbers. You can start to roll dice in your head, and you can start to figure out how to role play your way through real life too. And then you have this great realization that everybody's just role playing, that it's all just one big D&D game. And even though you don't have a flaming, you know, +10 sword in your hand, you can still get to the treasure.
Let's get some of the other geeks down here in the basement with us. Kurt is calling us from Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Kurt.
Yes, hello.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. You know, going back to the attributes that each character has, there were three that are largely physical: strength, constitution, and dexterity, and then three that are largely mental: intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. And that's one of the main things that Dungeons & Dragons allowed me to think about, was the difference between intelligence and wisdom. And that was really difficult for me as a young person, and it still is today. I think, you know, what's something that is judged by wisdom? What is something that I can determine with intelligence? And which is more important? Sometimes, of course, intelligence is very important and it can't be underrated, but wisdom, I think, you know, is something that I really came to appreciate. And it was through the playing of that game and putting those characters in those circumstances and testing against those abilities that really illustrated the difference between those two points.
What do you think, Adam Rogers? A unique mental experience, we can say that.
Absolutely. The beauty of Dungeons & Dragons, and in fact of role-playing games as they exist now, and I'm arguing even of something like a MySpace or a Facebook, is that they're rehearsals, right? They can function as rehearsals for, or even replacements for, the real world. It interests me that years after the attributes and character sheets of Dungeons & Dragons, the social scientists kind of started to come around to this, right? People don't talk about IQ anymore as a measure of intelligence, for example. They talk about G, right, which combines all these other measures of things like sort of, you know, mathematical intelligence, emotional intelligence. Daniel Goleman writes about this. The ways that you interact with other people, the ways that you interact with numbers, the ways that you interact with words, all these different kinds of intelligences and skills that really look very much like a D&D character sheet, except they don't have dexterity.
Thanks for calling, Kurt. Let's go to Shiloh. Shiloh joins us from Long Island.
Greetings. As I say, it's more than a game he created. It's a culture. I mean, I can move anywhere in the U.S., walk around, find a game shop, ask if there's a game going on, and immediately be plugged into a new group of acquaintances to become friends in a new social circle.
Very important, especially for those of us who don't know how to walk into a room and be charming right away, right? You can walk in and find a team of players.
It's a charisma score.
Exactly.
All this, of course, made easier now on the internet. But.
Oh, and I play WoW as well, but I still play pen and paper games. And he also created more than D&D. He created, you know, he helped influence writers. He helped influence Boot Hill, Avalon. You know, TSR helped create an industry in general. And that's it for my comments, gentlemen. I'll sign off so others can speak.
Thank you very much, Shiloh. Let's go to Gordon. Gordon is calling us from Naples in Italy.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, no, I was, they told me I should repeat this. I was the first person, I think, to write about Dungeons and Dragons in Italy many years ago, sometime in the 70s, on an extreme left-wing, left of the Communist Party newspaper. And
awesome.
It was a page that also talked about the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you know, and things like that. And I had never played the game, and they've never played the game. But I went to the shops and tried to get people to explain it to me, and I just did my very best to repeat what they told me. But my question is this: you said I'm speaking to your guest. I mean, he said that even so many years after, and it's a long, many, many years, he gets together with the guys who he had played with. I was wondering how many girls were involved in this. That's my question.
I'm sorry,
and
how many
I'm going to get off the air because I'm international. Thank you.
It's an unfamiliar term to me. No, it's true. As I mentioned in the piece, the Dungeons and Dragons did not make me so popular with the ladies. I don't know that anybody's really looked at why that was the case, because of course, in online worlds like even the early multi-user dungeons that came out of MIT and in places like World of Warcraft today, there are a lot of women players.
Well, some people would probably say that young women don't need the kind of formal nature of the game in order to have social interactions and do role playing. That's what little girls do naturally from the time that they're 3 and 4 years old. Men perhaps need they need the dice and the swords and all of this in order to do essentially the same thing, which is to figure out the world through stories, right?
That's a really interesting observation, especially because I think you could probably argue that if there are, I mean, if you buy into sort of what, I guess, what a toy company would tell us about play patterns, boys' toys and girls' toys, right, there are still narrative and role play structures in, let's say, the way you operate with Barbie dolls that are primarily aimed at girls, right?
You know, we just got an email from a woman, from Jan in Dover, New Hampshire. It says, as a 30-something woman and a self-identified geek who played a lot of Dungeons & Dragons in the 80s and 90s, she says, all of my boyfriends and my husband of 12 years were acquired through D&D games. Female gamers may have been a rarity then, but I'd like to think it worked out in my favor. I miss playing and hope that when our kids are older, we can game with them as my parents did. Yes, that would be three generations of geeks. Of course, now, I probably, a lot of women would think that perhaps they should have spent a little bit more time, I should say, with those D&D players, as those D&D players went on to enormous success. Right, Adam?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
No, I think that I think it is the case that the kids who were playing D&D are the ones who figured out how to program and who liked tinkering on things, that the skills that D&D, the kind of personality that you have that brings you to D&D or that brings you to Star Wars, that brings you to Babylon 5, right, are those personalities also tend to have an affinity for the kind of technology that has become a social and economic kind of infrastructure for U.S. culture, for global culture probably too, I think. These are the folks who went on to build the smaller cell phones and to write the different programming languages and to come up with browser for the World Wide Web. These are the guys who were playing those games, who were also playing video games and who were reading comic books and who were, you know, at the movies every weekend instead of at parties. These are the folks who I grew up with and they're the ones who write the software that makes the world go round.
Success. Success at last. Adam Rogers is a senior editor for Wired. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Eric. Eric's calling us from Cedar Rapids.
Hello.
Hey, Eric.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I've been playing since 1979.
You use the present tense. You're still playing?
Yes. I'm actually in a group, and I run a group as well.
Well, what is it like? How has it changed the game?
Really, it's gotten a little bit more intergender because of games like World of Warcraft and stuff like that getting popularity. I've actually got two females in the group I run and two in the group I play in.
But is it still face-to-face with pencils and paper and that kind of thing? You don't have to do it online or you don't have big graphic engines and lots of shoot-'em-up kind of things?
Well, because my handwriting's awful, I use my computer to track my character, but I still roll dice and stuff like that.
They haven't developed the electronic die yet, have they?
No, I just don't trust it.
Oh, wait, does it exist?
Yeah, there are online die rollers. Whitecastle.com has a pretty good one.
But where's the fun of that? The tactile feeling of those polyhedral dice was so compelling, you know, to be able to have them in your hand and feel the different shapes.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for your phone call, Eric. We have time for one more caller. Let's go to Oliver in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Hey, Oliver.
Okay. Hello. What I'd like to say is that it teaches you cooperation. There is absolutely no way you, by yourself, your character, is going to go up against a red dragon and kill that red dragon by yourself. So you've got to learn teamwork. And that's the main thing it taught me. I've been playing since 83. I've mostly moved on to EverQuest now online, but it's still the same principle. Cooperation gets the job done.
Well, Oliver, how is it different playing online instead of the old Dungeons & Dragons? Did you move over just because it was more exciting? You could play with more people around the globe?
No, I moved over because I live in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and there's very few people.
Couldn't get a game together.
Yeah.
Well, that was always the thing about D&D, which is no matter how small the town you were in, you gathered with an interesting group of people. They tended to find themselves even before chat rooms and that kind of thing. Right, Adam?
I think that's true. Like any subculture, right? You begin to find the basements, libraries, gaming stores, comic book stores, bars, you know, where the kind of people who you are like gather and that you can find a home. The cooperation thing is an interesting point because, of course, a lot of kids learn to do that playing a team sport, right? And that's what you're supposed to learn out on the baseball field or on the soccer field. Those of us who had, let's say, limited success on either the baseball field or the soccer field, you know, found a little bit more of that kind of camaraderie, pretending to be in a dungeon walking around with your buddies.
Oliver, yeah. Thanks for your phone call. Drew is in Fremont, California. Hey, Drew, we have time for a very short phone call.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say, just as a, like, I've grown up with games all my life, and I think we really do have to thank Mr. Gygax for changing what the definition of what a game was. Before Dungeons & Dragons, games were like Monopoly, Scrabble, Sorry, and really we would not have Halo, we would not have Splinter Cell, we would not have Metal Gear Solid if it weren't for Gary Gygax.
All right, thanks, Drew. What do you think, Adam Rogers? Are the games today, do they depend on at least their ethics and their notions of avatars and characters to Dungeons & Dragons?
No question about that. I mean, there's no question that the games rely on what Dungeons & Dragons built, what Gary Gygax built, in terms of being a character, managing stuff, figuring out what kind of armor you need versus what kind of magic spells you need. You know, that sort of management is built into the play structure of almost all these games. Certainly, you know, Halo in terms of switching from a Spartan laser to a lance or something like that. But, you know, more than that, I would say that even beyond games, certainly games owe a huge debt to Dungeons & Dragons, but almost anything you do online, the gaming metaphor for how you participate in an online culture is a much more potent one than sort of a narrative metaphor that comes out of, you know, traditions of English literature, let's say, or something. But the gaming metaphor is that's the world we live in now.
There you go. Thank you very much, Adam Rogers. Adam Rogers is the senior editor at Wired Magazine in San Francisco. His piece on D&D, Geek Love, appeared in the New York Times, and you'll find a link to it on our blog. He joined us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Thanks, Adam.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow, performance-enhancing drugs, not just for athletes anymore, but for academics. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Robert Smith in Washington. We'll